Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Trigger warning. The following episode contains descriptions of graphic violence, sexual assault, and adult language. Viewer discretion is advised.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Max.
And each Wednesday, we crack open a bottle of wine and dive in to some thrills, chills, and spills. This is Innocent Till Tipsy.
We are going to have so much content for Patreon from this one episode because it's so wild, and I couldn't fit in all of the wildness that the Warrens, as a couple from the infamous Conjuring series, did in their lifetime. So if you want more, make sure you're joining our Patreon. We do live Q&As every Thursday. I have so much on this. I had to start picking and choosing crap because I was like, there's no way I can fit all of the insanity into this one episode. So I just wanted to start by talking about how ever since its conception, Hollywood as a whole, they've kind of loosely used the term based on a true story.
Like, yeah, it's super loose. It's like there was a guy once and they're like, based on a true story. You're like, what else? I thought this whole thing happened.
Yeah, I remember the one that stuck with me when I was younger was The Strangers. Did you ever see that
movie? Yes, that is what came to my mind because I was like, the thought that people could show up at your house for no other reason except for your home.
That's it. That's the one line of dialogue. One of the only lines of dialogue that the killers say, like why they are psychologically torturing this couple in their own home is because you were home. Yeah, it gives me chills just talking about it. So then, of course, I'm 16. I'm looking up. We had Google at that point in time. I'm like, what is true about this movie? Because I need to know because I'm now absolutely terrified. Like, is Tamara home? I'm like, oh, screw off. So looking it up, found out it's actually loosely inspired by the Manson family murders.
Yes.
Very loosely. Come on.
There was people home.
Yes. And it also was inspired by the main writer of the script. He had a series of break-ins that occurred in his childhood neighborhood when he was a kid. So he said this, I'll quote him. Yeah. As a kid, I lived in a house on a street in the middle of nowhere. One night while our parents were out, somebody knocked on the front door and my little sister answered it. At the door were some people asking for somebody that didn't live there. We later found out that these people were knocking on doors in the area and if no one was home, breaking into the houses. So not as, I mean, still scary and creepy, but not as bad as like what The Strangers is.
I know, but I'm just getting chills. Okay, I don't know if you can see this. Like literally chills after chills after chills because when you watch that movie, you're like, no, like so, oh my gosh, yes. And it just sticks with you. It's crazy.
Oh, that one definitely does. And another series, so I haven't watched it. I don't know if I will. Did you watch Dahmer?
I don't want to say that I have because I don't like that I have, but I have.
How did you feel about it?
I haven't finished it. I finished 7 hours of it. I'm like in episode six or seven. So yeah, 7 hours of my life. Okay, so that actor, whatever his name is, like Evan
Peters,
he plays him really well because he, so I feel like sometimes when they do these type of dramatized like things, they make the villain or the killer, whoever, like the antagonist, like so hated that you're like, I hate him or this is not believable. They make it so you don't hate him or like him. They make it so he's like an outcast. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's more realistic, I guess, versus being like, oh, he's such a bad person. Like you feel you like meet him kind of as a weird guy or as an alcoholic. And you're like, but you don't pity him. Like, I think that's good, too, because I was I don't want to pity him. Like
some people are pitying. Some people are making lust. Like what are the thirst TikToks? I've seen a lot of those. No. I will say I used to be when I was studying him in university, I was a what you would probably call a Jeffrey Dahmer sympathizer, because I'd watched all his interviews and I was like, oh, he's what do you call it? A remorseful serial killer. He's one of the only ones that's explained things. No. After doing full research on this man, we even looked at him this morning. Christopher Carver, I believe, is the name of the man that murdered him in prison and murdered another man as well. He talked about how Jeff was actually very antagonizing in prison, actually. And he would make fake body parts out of the food, drizzle it with ketchup and pretend it was blood, and like just weird. And that was why he was like, I'm fucking done with him. Yeah.
And I feel like they portrayed that really well. So you don't like him or dislike him. You don't pity him. You just feel like as his behavior like progresses, you're like, you're bad seed. Like now you're just from like bad seed to despicable human. Like you just, it's, I felt like I wanted to be like, ew, gore, like Hugh, hey, like I didn't want that. I was like, if I start watching this and it's like Jeffrey Dahmer, what a like villain. You're like, no, he was a person that like grew into this horrible person.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was accurate.
Yeah. So I will say a lot of people, I made a TikTok about it concerning especially the victims' families. The victims' families, a couple of them have come out and said, of course, they weren't asked. It's all public record. They're never asked when these shows comes out. I can't imagine, they probably turn on their TV just like all of us. And his face is the first thing that pops up right now. Like he's been number one on Netflix for however long,
and 2 weeks or something.
So the feedback I got on that TikTok was a lot of people said it's not based on the victim's point of view, which I thought was interesting because that is one of the marketing points for this docuseries, is that it's based on, and then a lot of people thought it was a documentary.
What?
Like to that level of truth. And I had to explain, absolutely not. It's a docuseries. It's a dramatized version of true events. It is not the full truth of what happened. I mean, they even portrayed a relationship between Dahmer and one of his victims, which
Tony,
never
I think.
Happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that I'm like, don't get it twisted. Like, make sure you're doing your own research if you are watching it. So just to tie it back to that, based on true events, not always the case at all. Like, make sure if you're watching a movie or watching, especially if it is based on true events, that you do your own research. We all have Google. We all have a way to kind of look it up.
I think for me, like, if you think about it as like the, it gives, I know it's dramatized, but some additional context maybe like, or like, it's like, I mean, I know they jump around in a timeline sometimes, but it's like more linear to me versus if you read like a Wikipedia, for example, you're like, boom, 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 boom. And that doesn't give me any faces or details to a victim. And at least when this is being portrayed across 10 hours, you are visualizing his victims as people, or like that they have, you know, so that how he would be able to move around in the world, say, or like what types of excuses he may have given to cops. They do play like one. And I don't know if this is true. You might know this, but they say it's the true 911 call of one of his neighbors. And I know that he was called, like they called attention to him multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like things like that are weaved in of truth that you're like, huh, okay. Like that's crazy. If someone did call in and say those words to police and they were like, this is how, this is what we think. We looked into it. It's fine. It's his boyfriend. And they're like,
Yeah,
do your research. I get it.
Yeah. And I feel, I don't know what the show portrayed, but I feel Dahmer definitely purposefully picked the victims that he picked for their minority status and the fact that nobody really would pay attention. And the police obviously did not pay attention, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So to tie it back into the Conjuring franchise with Ed and Lorraine Warren. This is another based on a true story movies, although this is more horror and it's supernatural. So I feel like the public more takes it with a grain of salt, you know?
Sure.
But the Conjuring franchise has at this point grossed over $1.9 billion from their movies over the last decade.
That's so wild, especially if we go back to Amityville, like being fabricated.
Oh my God.
It is a lot of money.
Oh my God. Yes. So at the time the movies were made, put out there, Lorraine was the only living person from the couple. You know, it's based off of the real life romance between self-taught demonologist Ed Warren and his clairvoyant medium wife, Lorraine. So Ed, I think, passed in 2006 of a heart attack. Lorraine was still kicking until 2019. The two, if you don't, It is crazy. The two of you don't know, they would travel to houses with haunted happenings and they would cast demons out of homes, out of people, out of objects. They have an entire occult museum at their house that you usually can't visit anymore. It's been closed for years. However, this October, on October 29th, they are having an event called Paracon, which I really wanted to go to, but I don't think I'm going to be able to.
Where's their house going, at?
It's in Connecticut.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I know. So they're going to open their doors for the first time in years, and you can go in and look at objects like the Annabelle doll. Everybody, I feel like, knows that case of the Warrens. We're going to talk about that a little bit more on Patreon this week. We have the Perrin family, which is the family that was based off of that first movie that took place in Rhode Island with the possession of the witch. Yes. Yeah. It's now famously known as the Conjuring House. This is another house you can visit. I believe that's in Connecticut as well, but I might be wrong on that. Of course, we talked about Amityville last week, an entire episode dedicated to it that they investigated. There's also the Enfield Poltergeist over across the pond in a North London suburb that they investigated, and the Devil Made Me Do It case, which is a very famous case that the third movie was based on. If you didn't know, they have three movies of the major Conjuring series.
I don't know. Yeah, it's not ringing a bell.
No, we will get to it. You might
maybe
know.
I was just like, too scared. I was like, no, I learned my lesson.
I'm done. So we will talk about that so much more now. Of course, they're being involved in these wild cases. There's a fight between good and evil, God and Satan. It seems outlandish, wild. Of course, they have their skeptics, but the couple was portrayed as pious, perfect, the height of romance in the movies. Have you seen some of these movies?
Yeah. I think there's Conjuring. Like, I've seen Annabelle. I've seen Amityville, we talked about. But yeah. And I feel like when you see them, especially as a kid, you're like, or like whatever teen, you're like, what's real? What else? Because yeah, in Annabelle, they show the museum. They show their basement and they talk about all the artifacts. Well, they don't talk. They should just like show artifacts.
During the release of the first film, the franchise had a lot of legal battles over the screen rights, who had the rights to portray the Warrens on film. And you would think it'd be straightforward. Like, obviously, Lorraine has the rights to her own story, except that Ed and Lorraine had a book written about their lives called The Demonologist, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren. And the man who wrote this, Gerald Brittle, would claim that he owned the rights to their story. They had signed it over. And so WB had no right to share her story. So as this is all coming out in this lawsuit, this woman, her name's Judith Penny. She's in her 70s, okay? She's not in this for any financial gain at all, okay? She's not getting anything. All she's doing is giving her witness statement. She alleges that when she was just 15 years old, she began a romantic sexual relationship with Ed Warren, who was at the time in his 30s.
Yo.
She said that when she was just 18 years old, the couple moved her into their family home.
Oh, she was groomed.
A third party to their romantic relationship over the next 40 years. So this isn't a minor claim. This is, we know this woman lived in their home.
Yeah. Eek. That's horrible.
So the Warrens would claim that they did this out of the kindness of their hearts, even their daughter, Judy. And that's what's weird, too. Their daughter's name is Judy. This girl's name is Judith. So it's going to get a little confusing. So keep that in mind. But there's only a couple years difference between Judy and Judith, which is also just
horrible.
Yeah. So we're going to get into all of that, what Judy knew about the situation between Judith and her parents, all of that. But this, of course, called into question not only the Warren's love story that's being portrayed on film as like this very pious Christian wholesome marriage, but it also calls into question their entire careers as paranormal investigators because it's based on their strong Christian Catholic faith. So
I do not think Christian or Catholic when I think of Ed and Lorraine Warren. No.
So we're going to touch on all of this and more, but let's talk about the wine because I've talked too long on this introduction.
God, I need wine. You're right. All right. Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We have more wine from our friends at Naked Wines.
Thank you, Naked Wines.
Thank you, thank you. And look, if you can't tell why I picked this bottle today, it matches my shirt. I know we went from just picking by labels to picking labels that match. So
yeah,
no, this one sounded amazing for fall. It's a Cab Sav out of Napa 2020. And it's one of the wines that we've talked about before, that Naked Wines, that they have angels that receive angel funding to produce different like batches. So that's one of these. This wine was funded by that angel funding. So pretty cool. And let's give it a taste, because we're drinking the same thing. I'm so excited to have the same one as you today.
Do we have all the same ones in this box now?
We do.
Oh, fun. I saw they put Jose back in. That was one of my favorites from last time.
And Cannonball too.
Oh yeah. I got my Halloween glass, since this is an episode for our spooky season. Spooky, spooky.
You have so many spooky Halloween glasses.
It's like, who's the real demon, the devil or Ed Warren? We won't know.
Yeek.
Yeek.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I need wine for this.
I'm shaky because I haven't eaten much this morning. We film these in the morning usually, so if I'm tipsy by the end of this, I am so sorry, but
I had my once a year pumpkin bread, so I feel good. Oh, I was like, what would go with pumpkin bread? My breakfast. A Cab Sav.
Perfect. This is really good.
I like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like this.
It's a perfect Cab Sav. I could definitely see myself eating a good dinner with this.
It's not too bold. So honestly, like, I feel like right now, maybe it's because it's the morning. I just want something that's a little, it's like sweet. And when we opened it, you could smell it was like sweeter. So
well,
I like it.
That's good. Okay, so I have a few disclaimers to get out of the way before we start talking about the upbringing of Ed and Lorraine Warren, how they met, their situation, because it's all coming from the demonologist book that I talked about earlier that was written by Gerald Brito, excuse me. And he wrote it all from the perspective, first person perspective of Ed and Lorraine Warren. Is first
weird. Did he interview? So they were part of this?
They knew him.
Project. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they were a heavy part of this project. And it's all very, like, I read a few reviews and people were saying that first-person perspective isn't evidence, number one. Number two, they said that it was a lot of Christian propaganda as well, like them trying to promote their faith, save people, all of that. So that was their whole gimmick, whatever. But it does call into question the veracity of what they claim in the book. So just this first part here where I'm talking about their background, disclaimer's done. Both Ed and Lorraine Warren were born in Connecticut less than a year apart from the other. Ed claimed he grew up in a haunted house.
To East Coast. I feel like everything's haunted on the East Coast.
Are you like, do you believe? I don't know if we've ever gone through this. Do you believe in ghosts? Or I don't, I'm a skeptic.
I'm not going to share it on this podcast.
Oh, no. But we're going to have ghost talk on Patreon soon.
I know. I do believe, but I have a certain set of beliefs around like what, yes.
Okay.
There's a spiritual world. I believe that. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So Ed claims he grew up in this haunted house. The lights would turn on and off with no explanation. Doors would open and close. He said he saw full-bodied apparitions. One of his family's landlady, who had actually died shortly before, he saw her. He said he also was visited by his deceased aunt, who would tell him stories about his future. Lorraine said she also discovered her clairvoyant abilities at a very early age. She said at about 9. But she said she was still skeptical of her abilities. Now, in the more believable aspect of things, she did say she also at that point in time started seeing auras around people. And she kind of knew what she was getting into with people when she would meet them. You know, like she just knew about them, which I definitely believe that's like, that is a gift people have, you know.
Another sense. Yeah.
I wish I had it. So
could have avoided so many exes.
I'm telling you, cheese and crackers.
Just have this like flashing like runaway.
So when they were in their teens, Ed actually worked at a movie theater. Okay. And Lorraine and her mother would frequent this movie theater quite often. And that's how they would meet.
How so were they like far in age? They're close.
No. So they're within a year from each other. And they went on their first date when they were both 16.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Lorraine claims that after her first date with Ed that very night, she had a vision of Ed as an old man, and she knew that she would spend the rest of her life with him.
So she was like she said she was clairvoyant from like a young age.
Hmm. Yeah. So when Ed was 17, though, he joined the Navy. And just a few months after the ship that he was serving on for World War II, it actually collided with an oil tanker that caused a huge fire. Now, all the men on board, they had to jump overboard, and only 69 of them survived, including Ed.
Wow.
Isn't that scary?
That's so wild and scary.
Yeah. He said he was like in the freezing water, like just praying, you know, was rescued. And after he was rescued, he returned home and immediately asked Lorraine to marry him. Like he knew, he's like, we're getting married. So they soon had their first child, Judy Warren, on July 6th, and first and only child, July 6th, 1950. She, as I said, she still manages her parents' occult museum. I think her husband kind of has taken the reins on that. She, if you look her up, she's really cute. She looks spitting image of Lorraine. Oh my God. And she supports a lot of animal shelters, which is why I don't feel bad at all mentioning Paracon. Those tickets, they're going to go to some, that money is going to go to some animal shelters. Like your money is in good hands with her. Like she's
how much
like
is Paracon? Do you know?
I think it's like
they can't let everybody in there.
I know. It's limited. Not that expensive. I know. I really want to go though. Oh God. I know. So after he left the Navy, Ed really took up artistry. He'd always been an artist, but he like really got into it after. Now, how they got into ghost hunting, he would have Lorraine drive him to local haunted homes, like homes he'd heard were haunted, right? They would sit out in their car, and within 30 minutes, he'd be able to sketch the homes. He then would go with Lorraine to the front door, knock, and when the homeowners answered, he would offer them the sketch as a way for them to invite them in the home to start talking about the haunting that was taking place.
He could sketch like their floor plan.
Well,
what
like,
would he
no,
be
like
sketching?
The outside of the home. Yeah, sitting outside.
I'm like, I'd be like, no, sir, you cannot come in.
yeah, I mean, I guess like nowadays, like you think about the 70s and 80s, yeah, maybe a little course, bit more trusting, then. But like nowadays we'd be like, holy hell, no, sir, or 60s too. But yeah.
You're just sitting outside sketching my house? I don't think so.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's wild.
Isn't that weird? I just think
so.
That's
he would
like
just
really
they would
strange.
Just sense that it's a haunted house.
It was like rumored usually in the area, like you know how you've got those like haunted homes and everything. Yeah. So yeah, and then he'd like make his way into the homes and start his ghost hunting.
That's crazy.
That's weird. Now, to their credit, they did not take fees for their work, but they did enjoy immense financial success from their work later on in years. They would have 9 books. A busy lecture schedule. They consulted on both of the Amity horror films. So both of them, the 79 version and the 2005 version. Isn't that interesting?
I think I do remember their names and credits. Yep. The last one. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
That's wild.
I know. And in 1952, they actually founded the New England Society of Paranormal Research. Back then, Ed was only one of 7 recognized demonologists, and he was the only lay demonologist recognized by the Catholic Church. So the only one outside of their...
I do not associate them with like Catholicism and stuff. I'm like, oh, they run an occult museum, but they're Catholic. Like...
Well, that's why. Okay, so my mom is still super heavy Christian. I don't really relate to any like belief system, but we were sitting downstairs and like talking about this whole thing. And she goes, I just like don't see the like connectivity between Christianity and what they were doing. And she's like, whatever. Like, yeah. Yeah. Because she even says
news
like...
to me.
Isn't there a part in the Bible too that says like don't talk to mediums or something? Like don't, I don't know.
I'm surprised that the Catholic church, but then they do exorcisms and I'm not Catholic, so I don't understand it. I don't understand how it comes together, but I'm surprised. Yeah.
We will touch on an exorcism in this. Okay.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So things are about to get wildly unhinged. All of this came out, as I said, very shortly after the first Conjuring movie's release due to all of these many lawsuits. They went through a lot of lawsuits, like between WB, New Line Cinema, the Warrens, all of that. So Before his immense success as a demonologist, to make ends meet, Ed worked as a bus driver in the early 1960s. This is how he met 15-year-old Judith Penny when he was in his 30s. She said the two of them soon began an amorous relationship, child grooming, hello.
Yeah.
That Lorraine was aware of.
Oh, I don't like this. I don't like it.
Yes. So at 18, like I said, she moves into the family home. She first lives in the bedroom across the hall from the couple, according to her own testimony in these court documents. And then they moved her up into an apartment that was built for her above the home. Okay. So according to these documents between New Line and Warner Brothers, she declared one night he'd sleep downstairs and one night he'd sleep upstairs.
I don't like it. Well, I mean, obviously make your own choices as full grown adults, but she was a child. That's
when it started.
I don't like.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Some people were talking about his affair. Yeah. His affair. And I'm like, I don't like that terminology at all. She was groomed. It was a whole thing. And yeah, we'll get into how it affected her life, everything. So she also alleges that Ed got her pregnant when she was in her 30s. The couple, she says, encouraged her to lie about the apartment above them being broken into and her being raped.
They'd rather have her be raped than claim this child. Or pregnancy? Yeah,
it would have ruined the baby? Their business. Okay. So it would have ruined their business. So because she wouldn't lie for them, she says then Lorraine encouraged her to have an abortion, which I know is against the Catholic Church.
Yeah, that's not Catholic.
No.
Wow.
So Judith says she did. And after the couple took her to the clinic and then brought her home that very same night, they went out to one of their lectures and left her at home alone.
This lady's been through a lot. She's groomed.
This is wild. So the Warrens' only daughter, Judy, claims that Judith was nothing more than a girl that they were helping through a hard time. Said that her parents gave her a place to stay, opening their home to her after years of childhood neglect. That her only real responsibility was to watch the house because they traveled so much, right? And also be a liaison for, like, when people would call and be like, oh my God, I've got a demon in my house. Like, I need Ed and Lorraine here. Then she'd be like,
an admin.
Yeah, let me set up your meeting. Yeah. Judy, the daughter, claimed that she never witnessed anything romantic or inappropriate at all between Judith and her parents. She and her husband believe that the now 70-year-old woman is being taken advantage of for financial benefits by these people that are suing the film companies for the story rights, right?
Okay.
Only problem is Judy, the Warren's daughter, did not live in the family home with her parents in her childhood.
I mean, I get why she can claim she wouldn't have known. Maybe she didn't know. Maybe she did know. But Judith knows.
Yeah. So she would actually live with Lorraine's mother, Georgiana, in Bridgeport, Connecticut. So she wasn't even in the same home. She was totally moved out. I my mom speculated yesterday. Sorry, I'm bringing up my mom a lot. My mom's in visiting because she had to take care of my cats for the hurricane and everything. So we talked through this script like so many times over the past week. But she brought up, she was like, maybe she was moved out because of her father's inclinations as well. Like, you know, like, why would you move your child out of your home? Now, she says it was because her parents traveled so much. It was just easier for her to live with her grandmother. But, like, it's weird. And the films don't portray that at all. The films portray Judy living in her family home and obviously don't portray Judith at all.
Yeah, right.
Anyways, so it's also hard to tell what she saw and what she didn't see, like you said, like, as a child. Because
she would have been almost her age.
Oh, right? Yeah. So almost, like, her age.
Mm-hmm. If he did think that was wrong, and then he wouldn't be letting his daughter see this or know about it. They'd just like, oh, we have a helper. We have an admin. We have a whatever.
Yeah.
Helper.
And she also said in an interview as a child, she didn't know what her parents did for a living.
Right.
So what else did she miss? Do you know what I mean? She didn't know. Yeah, she knew about
the stuff.
Yeah, 100%. 100%
from her.
Mm-hmm. So according to many of the lawsuits that were lodged against Warner Brothers and New Line Cinema, at that same year that Judith moved in, she was actually arrested, okay, for living with a married man.
What?
I know. So at the time, this is illegal. Like, isn't that weird to think of? Like, there were states with illegalities against you committing adultery in your own home. But why was Ed not arrested? Like, these are all the questions that I have concerning all of this.
Well, I feel like laws a lot of times lean towards even if it's like, again, sex workers lean towards penalizing women over like the perpetrator. Like men at 100%. Best were equally responsible in a lot of these situations. So,
and I think it also might have to do. So that night, Judith says that she's like held at the prison. Right. And the sheriff is trying to get her to sign a document about their relationship and she refused. Okay.
Well, so she would be prosecuted. She'd be like the adulterer, or she'd be the one in trouble.
Interesting though. Like my mom said yesterday, she was like, well, he must have had some complaints against him. And it makes me wonder like how many people knew about this whole situation that was going on, especially since he's so involved with the church. Like I grew up in the church as well. I grew up in a Baptist church or an evangelical church as well, but like And so I can see people being like very upset about this entire situation that's going on and being like, he's out here representing us like as a community. Absolutely. Well,
it's a behind closed door situation. Obviously if his daughter claims she didn't know anything about it. So it is closeted of a relationship. And also that's who's giving her a roof over her head. Like how many times are, like when we talk about like victims, are they going to press charges over someone that's like holding, you know, maybe work or house or like livelihood, like over their head. So I don't think that's not that, I guess I'm not that surprised when you think about it, why she wouldn't press charges or why she wouldn't report him or sign anything that has to do about their relationship.
Yeah. And so she would actually spend the next month in juvie and Ed would have to take her to and from school, which I thought was like a weird situation for that to have happened. But for some reason they were able, I couldn't find anything more on that. But according to the court documents, she did spend a month in juvenile detention for this whole thing. So allegedly, Judith also said in these documents that Ed was abusive towards Lorraine. Yeah. So she witnessed him hitting Lorraine so hard that she would lose consciousness. She said, and I feel like this is such a tell for the times how she said this, but she said he'd often have to hit her to shut her up.
Eek. Yeah.
She said that some nights she was afraid that they were going to kill each other.
It's like being explained away.
Yeah. Yeah. So as I said, all of this is allegations. This is all just from Judith's like statements. Obviously, there's things to back it up. I mean, Judy, the daughter, she confirmed Judith did live with them. You know, like this is not out there. 40 years. You can't make that up, you know?
how did she go back to live with them if that's what she was like arrested for or whatever?
This is what I don't understand. I would love to know more about this. So yeah, if Judith ever wants to come on our show and like spill the tea, I'm like, girl, like get you some wine and come chat with us.
Don't they have to like release you to someone's care or to somewhere from juvie? Like they're like, oh, we can't really
we'll
go
release
back
you back to your abuser. Like it's fine. It's weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I find wild though is there is something more modern that backs up these claims.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Allow your imagination to be piqued by stories that are brought to life through captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. As an Audible member, you'll be able to keep your heart rate up month after month because you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. If you're in the mood for a shocking psychological thriller, check out None of This Is True by Lisa Jewell. Embrace brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
So Lorraine's deal with New Line Cinema, which was signed before any of these allegations came out. Like, remember this. She had to sign away her life story for, I think her starting price was $150,000. It was something like that. But of course, she's getting royalties, all of the stuff from these movies, right? So in this, she had pretty specific things that her and Ed's characters could not be portrayed doing on film.
Oh.
Let me get into this. It's so weird. Okay. The films could not show her or her husband engaging in crimes, including sex with minors.
What?
I'm telling you, it's weird.
Why do you have to list that?
It's so specific.
You'd be like, please don't ever portray me having sex with minors.
I'm telling you.
Just to cover your grounds? Like,
child pornography, prostitution, or sexual assault. Neither the husband nor wife could be depicted as participating in an extramarital sexual relationship. These are very specific things that they cannot.
Very specific.
Very specific. Like, it's so weird. Like, and I was reading, it's the Hollywood Reporter was the article that I got this from. Obviously, they're like, you know, you have to like vet your sources and everything. But they did have an expert on who was a legal expert that said these are, of course, usually when you sell your story, there are things that pertain to your story that you're like, I'd rather leave that out. So you do sign it in. But they were like, this is so out of like left field that it's weird that she included it in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you'd be like, I don't want like something that's relevant to them that you'd be like, I don't want to be shown, say, like doing an exorcism, because that it's like you're like, it probably won't be shown exactly how it happened or whatever. You're like, I don't want to be shown, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
that's like really explicitly like laid out where you're like, don't cover that part.
Just leave that out.
Just leave that out.
Another fun fact. Are you ready for this one? I don't think you are.
No, I'm not ready.
Benjamin Rottenborn was the lawyer representing.
He's everywhere. Oh, my God. He's everywhere.
When I read that in the article, I was like, Rottenborn. I had to get up and walk around. I was like, not Amber Heard's lawyer. No. Yes. So
there's always a tie.
Oh, my God. Wow. So he was representing New Line Cinema in all these lawsuits, protecting the Warren story for New Line Cinema, right? And he weighed in on these lawsuits in a statement. He said, for years, Brittle, the guy that wrote the book, and his cohort, Tony DeRosa Grund, who we're going to talk about here shortly, he was the producer for the first film, have conspired to strip New Line of its rights, constantly changing positions and concocting new theories with complete disregard for the truth. Which I find funny because he supported Amber Heard. So you got to get that back. It was a good, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They need representation.
And I would say, for as much as I hate, I do not like him. Like, I think he's a jackass, but I think he was a darn good lawyer. I think he was the only good lawyer she had on her team.
He's retained by high paying clients. That's for sure. He's doing something right.
And he's still, I think he's like one of the only ones that she hasn't fired yet. So he's still going through the appeal process.
He's got thick skin.
Oh, my land. Oh. So on from Rottenborn. And he is not the one. A lot of people get him confused with the other lawyer that represented her that was like, that objected to himself. But that's not Benjamin.
That, I love that. That like never gets old for me. They're like, that was you? Oh, yeah.
Rottenborn was the one that the judge had to keep reminding Johnny to not antagonize. She'd have to be like, Mr. Depp, just answer the question. Because he'd be like, Mr. Rottenborn. Oh, gosh. So Judith, not the daughter, the Judith, the live-in, also claims in 1990 that Ed had her don a sheet, okay, and walk through Union Cemetery in Easton, Connecticut, to portray the famous Connecticut ghost, the White Lady, that's often supposedly seen in the cemetery so that he could catch this ghost on camera.
No.
Now, you may be wondering why I'm not sending you a file photo of like
the situation. Because it's a girl in a sheet.
Well, it's actually under lock and key by Lorraine Warren. I mean, it's probably by her family now since she's passed in 2019. It has never been released to the public, but it was something Ed claimed. He did get this ghost on camera, never released it, but he caught it. And Judith claims, yeah, because it was me. So
I wonder now, like, obviously we've seen like plenty of like people that challenge photo evidence of like Nessie and like Loch Ness, you know, whatever. So yeah. I wonder now if they can see, like, it's definitely under lock and key because they're like, yeah, it's a lady in a sheet.
Yeah. Yeah, if you know any photo experts that want to get on here and talk about that Amityville Horror photo, I would love to sit and do it as like, because everything I've seen it in, it's been a documentary for Ghost and the Paranormal. So it's obviously like, oh my God, they caught this kid. Yeah. I have never heard the other side of it. So I would love, especially now that we know, like from researching the Amityville Horror, they didn't release it until 3 years later. So was it taken that night, or did they have a kid dress up in pajamas and peek around the side of the, you know? It's weird. So, to their credit, though, Ed Warren would visit houses before he investigated them. Like, people would call him, be like, we got an infestation going on here. So he'd show up, and he said, like, 9 times out of 10, it was like they had a water leak. So that's why the house is creaking. It's warped. Or a pipe burst. So this is, like, the situation. It's not an actual possession. So to their credit, they weren't, like, it wasn't like you called them and they were there.
Like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, ready to make a spectacle of the whole situation, which have me wonder, right? Like, and I wonder, too, like, after watching their interviews and stuff, if they believed a portion of the situations that they thought they were in. Do you know? Or maybe it was true.
I'm sure it's psychological. Too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of things. Yeah. Like if you're alone in the dark and you're like listening hard enough, like you might hear something. You get it.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah. But it's crazy that they're like, no, call a plumber.
you have a plumbing issue.
We got bats. Yeah.
Yeah. That was actually portrayed in the first Conjuring movie, too. Like, I think there's a clip that these literally. So this is the whole thing with me. I used to be a huge fan of the Warrens even before these movies came out, because, you know me, I'm into all the spooky shit. Right. So I had already researched a bunch of the shit and I knew who Ed and Lorraine were before the movies came out. I was so excited when these movies were being made. Also, Lorraine has a cameo in the first one. I like almost cried.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the coolest thing. And then come find out all this. And now I personally am sure they're fraudsters now. But of course, do your own research. What have you. But the first Conjuring movie had actually been in the works for over 20 years.
That's crazy.
Isn't it weird? So ever since Ed Warren, he came into the office of this producer, Tony DeRosa Grund, who we mentioned earlier, and he played them a tape of Caroline Perrin, and she is the titular character in the first Conjuring movie. So the woman that gets possessed, the mother of the whole family, that entire thing.
Right.
So he had that interview. He plays it with Tony. At the end of the meeting, Tony, they're also being recording, they're recorded their meeting. But at the end of their meeting, you can hear Tony on the recording say, if we can't make this into a film, I don't know what we can. He can also be heard discussing the idea for the movie with Ed. Now, Tony would be the producer for that first Conjuring movie. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, he would be one of the many people to sue Warner Brothers, alleging he had been forced out of all the sequels and any monetary gain from the franchise, which kind of sucks because if you brought them the idea, like, I would be like, dude,
you're gonna fight for that. It's all your idea. Yeah.
So the first Conjuring movie is released in July 2013, right? By September 2013, which is so wild to think. That's, it was almost
10 years ago. I know. I'm like, holy shit, 10 years.
It's so weird. So by September of 2013, that fall, he sent an email to the Warner Brothers executives. Now, he was upset because he said the portrayal of the Warrens in the movie was a far cry from the true story of who they actually were. And he met both of them. So it's not like he's out to sea here. He knew them. Mm-hmm. He said, quote unquote, I was mortified as to the inaccurate portrayal of the relationship of Ed and Lorraine Warren. His email also stated that Judy, their daughter, did not live with their parents. So he laid that out there. And he said,
because isn't there a scene where she's at home with the grandma?
Yeah. There is later that grandma's taking care of her and she's at the house and like Annabelle gets out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like, I remember being like, oh my God, lock the basement.
Right.
Yeah.
He also says, get this. This is a quote from the email. Ed was a pedophile, a sexual predator, and a physically abusive husband. Lorraine enabled Ed to do this. She knowingly allowed this illegal, criminal relationship to continue for 40 years. They lied to the public. And this is before Judith had come out with everything. So he also wrote that he had assured Judith Penny personally that all the sequels that they were about to produce from this, because this movie obviously has made a shit ton of money, so would tone down the romantic portrayal of the Warren's marriage. And he warned execs in this email that Judith might tell the press her side of things if they continued with the storyline the way it was going.
To make it be like, oh, this lovey-dovey couple.
Hmm. Yeah.
Eek.
Yeah. He said, quote, once this comes out, do you think Patrick Wilson or Vera Farmiga will knowingly play Ed and Lorraine Warren ever again? The answer is no one would. No amount of spin from any crisis PR firm can ever fix this once the truth has come out.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that that's who portrayed them. Huh? Yeah. Like, who's going to portray a child molester, basically, like that was not knowingly doing so? Yeah. Eek.
Yeah. Yeah, bad. So, and I feel like it sucks too, because this, I feel like the these allegations weren't as publicly made aware of as they possibly should have been.
No, had no idea. Still, yeah. 2022. Do you think Lorraine was, because I don't know enough about them, like battered woman syndrome, like didn't speak out? Or do you think she was like aiding and abetting this like relationship? Where do you think her culpability falls?
I think it's a mixture of the two, given the time. Do you know what I mean?
A like, long time to be like, I'm a battered woman that can't speak out.
Yeah. But. And also given to like the time that it was happening in as well. Because you think they started this in early 1960s is when she was moved in. I feel like battered women syndrome, but also like, you know how you protect your family, protect your husband at all costs. And especially back then, it was more like narrow-minded. Like, I feel like back then too, like people more would blame the woman for things. So it wasn't necessarily Ed's problem. And we'll get into this a little bit later. Judith continued her friendship with Ed until he died. With Lorraine, she did not. She obviously had a lot of distaste for Lorraine, a lot of like malice towards her. So it's weird when you think of that, because I feel like nowadays we would be more like, that was a definitely fucked up situation that I never should have been in. I blame both parties equally. Whereas like you look at it 50 years ago and they're like, yeah, that bitch, like, I can't believe she let me move into her house.
Yeah, I was going to say, or like Stockholm syndrome ish, where she's like fine with Ed, but then she's like, you could have saved me and you did nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. Like the whole situation. Yeah. There's like, so it's sad. Weird. She missed out on a lot, but yeah. Yeah.
I'm just wondering. So, yeah. Wow.
No. The film, and I wondered that too, as I was like, okay, if she is being beat to the point that she's unconscious, you know, like how, and obviously people didn't know that. Like, this is the first claim I've heard that Ed was like abusive. And now there's like two people alleging it, because not just Judith, but also this man that met him, like this producer that met him is like, no, he's a pedophile. But then that also calls into the question, the producer, now I'm on a rant, but like, you're going to make a movie off of this guy when you know he's a child predator.
You want to work with someone that's so unsavory?
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The first film, based on the Perrin family, who in 1973, they claimed they moved into this house. There were spirits that were attached to the house, haunting them. They call Ed and Lorraine, right? According to Andrea Perrin, who was 12 when they moved into the house, she said eight generations of one extended family had lived and died at the farm. Some of them had never left. My mother did historical research and found that virtually every entity we were able to name as living beings either died by their own hand or died a traumatic death, and so sudden a death that they didn't seem to know that they were dead. Creeps, but yeah. So in real life, not portrayed in the film, the Warrens investigated the Harrisville case, this Perrin family home, and it came to a sudden end when Roger Perrin, the father, ordered them to quote-unquote get the hell out of the house after a dramatic seance in which Carolyn began speaking in a strange language then levitated out of her chair.
Ooh.
Andrea Perrin, the daughter, said the only time I was ever truly frightened was during that seance. There are no words to adequately express the event. Now, the movie was not filmed at the actual Conjuring house. The studio actually opted to use their $13 million budget for this film to build their own house that bears little to no resemblance to the real Conjuring house. Actress Joey King told Drew Barrymore in a recent interview on her show that during the filming in 2013, she started getting strange bruises on set. We've talked about strange occurrences on set,
on
right?
On set, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She soon discovered she had a rare blood disorder that required a daily hospital visit to check up on her. But as soon as filming was done, she never dealt with that disorder again. That's weird.
Well, that's weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can visit the Perrin family home, as I said earlier, for day tours, events, movie watch parties, overnight stays. They are making money off of this. The current owner's daughter, as we said, you should. In Amityville, we were like, man, you're already capitalizing off of this commercialization. Why not capitalize more? We're at this point now. But the current owner's daughter, she has a TikTok account, which features her experiences within the house. Yes.
Collab.
Yes. If you want more spooky content, head over to Madison's page. We'll put it in somewhere. Sasha will put it in. I'll send it over to her so she can, you can add her and go follow her. She does really cool lives. I hear her family might be selling the house, but I'm sure we'll get information on who's going to have it. I'm sure it will still be kind of this bed and breakfast type thing. Fingers crossed, because I love a good spooky house. But the third Conjuring movie, The Devil Made Me Do It, is actually based on a true crime that is called The Devil Made Me Do It. It's The Devil Made Me Do It case. The case of Arne Johnson. And you haven't heard of this?
It's not ringing any bells. I think I was done with The Conjuring after this. I was like, I can't. I need to be able to sleep soundly at night. I need to look this up. Gotta know.
Okay. Do it.
Yeah. No, tell me about it. I'm looking.
Okay. Let me tell you. So Arne Johnson, he murders his landlord after his landlord grabbed his girlfriend and wouldn't release her. Okay. And that day was really weird. So that day, Arne calls out sick for his own job, but then he goes to visit his girlfriend at this dog grooming place that she works at, where oddly enough, his landlord works at too. Like, it's the weirdest situation ever. And then
because
go to lunch.
It's super new. 2021.
Yes.
No, I am too old and too scared for this. That is why. Yes. It's because the other ones, were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. Arne Johnson, weird day. He calls out of work first thing. He then joins his girlfriend at her workplace, which is a dog grooming place, which also is where his landlord works. Okay. So strange. He then goes out to lunch with them where they all drink heavily. I'm like, what kind of job is this? I'd be cutting dogs.
Don't be taking your don't be taking your dogs there.
No,
drinking
do not.
At lunch. Get a buzz cut.
Yes. He then says they returned back to like where they were working and the landlord grabbed his girlfriend Debbie for like literally no reason and wouldn't release her even when he asked. The witnesses state he growled like an animal, Arne did. Okay. And he grabs his landlord and repeatedly stabbed him with a 5-inch pocket knife. Okay. Like a little it was the first murder in this quiet town in decades, which I just think should be mentioned because we're about to get into crazy town. Because just before the murder, Arne had been present for the exorcism of Debbie's younger brother, 11-year-old David Glatzel, which of course featured the Warrens.
What?
So Arne had been living with the Glatzels at the time of the exorcism. So with his girlfriend, I'm not 100% sure why, but I read a New York Times article at the time and the mom just said, well, he was dating my daughter. So like, of course we gave him a place to live. So I guess he was like down on his luck or like whatever. But during that time.
So they just let him come to the exorcism? Come on in.
Yes. So during that time, they have this exorcism where there were at least 4 priests present for and the Warrens. Okay. So this is like a whole to do, this exorcism. And Lorraine Warren would claim in this New York Times article that I read that she heard Arne ask the demon to come into him, saying he would actually say, come into me, leave the little lad alone. So the claim is that Arnie's possessed and that's why he killed his landlord. But wait, it gets crazier. I just had to include this. This is from the same article. This is the mother of David Glatzel saying this about his demon possession. He would kick, bite, spit, swear, terrible words. Worse, she said, he experienced strangling attempts by invisible hands, which he tried to pull from his neck, and powerful forces would flop him rapidly, head to toe like a rag doll. And he couldn't even do a sit-up. He's too fat. Leave the little lad alone.
Why is this a movie?
Why did she include that he's too fat?
Like, you can't do a sit-up.
The article also called him obese. And I was like, you can't say that. Like, what the hell is wrong with these people? He's 11 years old. He's not obese. He's just growing. Oh, my God. Like,
leave the lad alone. Let him be. He's 11. No, that's crazy. That's crazy. That's crazy.
So was David Glatzel possessed? I did this a little bit on my TikTok, but I mean, that's really up for you to decide whether he was possessed or not. Depends on what you believe. It is worth noting, and this was not mentioned in the book or the movie that came to follow this flipping case. Actually, two movies that came to follow this flipping case was Mrs. Glatzel had recently watched The Exorcist with her entire family. Okay. She'd also been attending multiple of the Warrens' lectures. It should also be noted that the Warrens were called to this exorcism by the Catholic Church themselves.
I was going to say, why were the Warrens there?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't the Catholic Church? Oh, my God. I just can't even. But why?
So
how does the Catholic Church feel about the exorcist movies?
Well,
nothing
the thing.
Good has come of these movies.
No, but this is it. For I was them. Just saying, like, I know.
Like, it's like all of a sudden the scapegoat, honestly.
Honestly. So it's so weird to me. So Mrs. Glatzel had actually contacted a local priest about this whole demonic possession thing going on with her son, right? And the local priest, I guess, got together with the Warrens and three other priests, and they were present for the exorcism. However, get this. None of this is officially confirmed by the Catholic Church. As, and this is like a quote from the whole article at the time, as while the diocese acknowledges that Father, and I can't pronounce his name, so I'm so sorry, and three priests from St. Joseph's work to resolve the boy's affliction, the priests themselves have been ordered not to speak publicly or with investigators.
Investigators? Because of this crime?
Yeah. They contend that it's a pastoral matter, not a criminal matter. How does the Catholic Church get away with this shit? No, you talk to investigators. Are you high?
They hit a lot over the years.
Oh, man. And they say this wasn't an official exorcism, but like,
they're like, just four of us stopped by to say hi.
With the Warrens?
Just like having a get together, not officially, unofficial get together.
It's the wildest thing. Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. I know for myself, since transitioning to a working from home environment, the importance of taking care of your own mental health. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You'll be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours.
Now, it's not a crisis line and it's not self-help. It is professional therapy done securely online. The service is available for clients worldwide, and you can log into your account anytime, day or night, to message your therapist.
It's more affordable than traditional in-person therapy, and financial aid is available.
You can visit their website and read other clients' testimonials that are posted daily.
Visit betterhelp.com/ITT, that's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And for listeners of Innocent Till Tipsy, you can go to their website and get an additional 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/ITT.
That's betterhelp, HELP.com/ITT.
Yeah.
Well, they could sure wipe their hands of it if it's not official. Weren't there. Weren't there for an exorcism.
No. We didn't see Arnie get possessed by the devil. So, Arnie.
Sorry, back to the exorcist movies, whatever.
Yeah.
true or not true, but they show them in Dahmer, since we were talking about that earlier.
Oh,
they
yeah, because he watches them
to get like, like amped up. So all like that movie, even if it's like a sign of the times, like them showing that was like amping people up in different ways, like working them up.
Yeah, that movie had a whole, I really do wonder if we could do a whole podcast episode on that movie, because that movie, I mean, Billy Graham, the evangelical televangelist, he said that film was demonically possessed. Like the actual film, he said, of that movie was demon possessed. Like that's how much of a hold that movie had on our culture here in the United States. Like it's, that movie influenced so much. So many crimes have come from that movie. So many weird events have come from that movie. And I really just think it's all from our own psyche. And Satanic Panic was at a height at this time, especially during this. Like that was something even the New York Times mentioned from this article, like during that time, that Satanic Panic is on the rise. We all have a fear of Satan at this point in time. Like they noted it in this article. So
yeah, I get why that content, like I call it what you want, possessed the movie, whatever. Like, but
yeah,
why the content was like insidious and like making people have ideas of things they may have not thought of if they hadn't watched it before or whatever. Yeah. Like it's making them feel like differently. It's planning, it's like stirring it up for them.
It is. Yeah. So Arnie actually was facing the death penalty. So his lawyer did a weird defense we'd never really heard of. And I don't think we've heard of it since. The defense was the devil made me do it. His lawyer saying in a fucking courtroom that the courts have dealt with the existence of God and now they're going to deal with the existence of the devil.
Wonder if that had been used before.
No, the judge, unlike the film, because the film runs with this, that we have to prove the existence of the devil as well. And that's one of the major quotes that Ed Warren always gave in his life is there. The devil is real. God is real. And it's who you elect to follow that chooses your fate, like chooses your destiny. So that was always his mission in life to kind of get that information out there, whether you believe it or not, it's fine. But that was like, we're talking about that. So this was a real defense, but unlike the movie, judge was like, this is nonsensical. I'm throwing this out immediately. Says it's impossible to prove. So like, so they went with the insanity plea and self-defense for this one. Which I think they should have gone with in the first point, because if he wouldn't release his girlfriend, I don't think that this is like a crime of he's going to do this again. I think it was more self-defense, but
interesting. I don't know enough about it. It's really strange.
It is. So the judge didn't get to throw this plea out though, before the Warrens had reached the press, making it an international sensation. Lorraine actually got her own book deal out of this.
Yeah.
And this book later inspired a Kevin Bacon and Andy Griffith movie called, it's very aptly titled, The Demon Murder Case.
Huh. Never heard of that. But interesting.
We need to have a watch party for that. We've been talking, I think you guys talked about it too on your spooky story time. I wanted to do a watch party for Marilyn. I've heard really bad reviews for Marilyn on Patreon. So I was like, I don't know if I want the blonde movie. So I was like, I don't know if I want to do a watch party for that on Patreon, but maybe for the Demon Murder Case.
Of my life.
I know. And it's supposed to be really bad, to be honest, like not factually accurate. Anyways, sorry, that's such a side note. But
I know, I feel like I keep kicking that can down the road. I want to see it. I want to just like absorb it and be like, cool, I did it. Like, I need to know.
I sat through it. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, yeah. Anna de Armas, too, the woman that portrayed her, also claimed that Marilyn was on set with them. And like when she didn't like things, she would throw things around and stuff. And that gives me a weird vibe, but doesn't matter. So back to David Glatzel. David Glatzel, who was supposedly possessed, had this exorcism, and his brother, they would actually sue Lorraine Warren for her book deal, said the entire thing was a hoax perpetrated by the Warrens, that David didn't need an exorcism, he needed mental help at the time. But instead, the Warrens had exploited their family for fame and money. This lawsuit, though, was dismissed. Arnie Johnson was sentenced to 10 to 20 years for first-degree manslaughter. He served only under 5 years of his sentence for good behavior, which is interesting if you think that he was demon-possessed. I don't know how the demon, like,
they were like, he's been good for 5 years.
Yeah. He did marry his girlfriend, Debbie. So that's something. And she recently passed just, like, a couple years ago. So, yeah.
That is wild. I also am surprised they didn't go for the insanity defense, too, if he has mental health issues.
Well, that was David Glatzel. David Glatzel, that had the exorcism and then passed the demon on to Arnie. And I know it's like a lot of names.
Well, it feels like Arnie had mental health issues if he was attending an exorcism that then like made him want to kill the landlord. Like, I don't know.
Supposedly, yeah. So back to Judith Penny, speaking of all the names we've gotten totally confused here. She has never received a cent for any of the Conjuring franchise's films. As I said, she has no love for Lorraine Warren, yet she remained friends with Ed until he passed in 2006. They only broke up in 2003, so just 3 years before he died of a heart attack.
Who broke up? Ed and Lorraine?
Ed and Judith, she says. They broke up in 2003.
That's so creepy to think that they were together. Like, I mean,
from 63 to 2003. Like, that's when she moved in with them, was 63, but they began their relationship in 1960. But yeah. From 63 to 2003. It's crazy. So according to one of the recordings, she said, "As I'm older now, I can't fathom why Lorraine let me stay there. Lots of times I think about, why did I do this? Why did I screw up my life like this? Sometimes I get angry about it. How much was taken away from me?"
Because you were groomed.
You're groomed. Yeah. Yeah. But you think about like,
you're thinking about it as if you had a choice, but you were groomed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so sad. Cause like you do think about how much she missed because of Ed, like, you know, going to school, possibly getting married, having actual babies,
having
all of
her
that
own life. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, again, like, this is one of the craziest cases I've ever looked at, and it's so insane. The Warrens have a long, sprawling franchise of movies that I doubt are ever going to be finished in my lifetime. I think this is going to continue forever. I will say their daughter seems like an amazing human. I felt bad writing this because I'm like, their daughter doesn't believe any of that crap happened. She, of course, believes her parents are wonderful. Wonderful.
Wants to believe
beings.
The best.
Of course. Yes. So if you would like to visit the Warrens Occult Museum, obviously neither of them run it anymore. It is in their daughter's care. She seems like a wonderful person. And Paracon happens on October 29th. So if you want to see Annabelle, you can go. Don't touch her. Don't open the case. But if you want to do it, take a photo for me. Send it to us on Patreon. But for now, this is all I have on the crazy Warren couple. Isn't this the most insane case, and the fact that it tied back to Johnny Depp's trial, I was like, I can't breathe.
I think it's insane because one, I never thought, I mean, mind blown. I never thought of them as like Christian-y, Catholic-y, like do-gooders.
That's so funny to me because I'd always research them. Yeah. So always I was like, Lorraine's this like super Catholic lady. Like, yeah.
I get it. Yeah, I kind of remember that. But like, that's not where my brain categorizes them. I'm like, occult, Ed and Lorraine. All right. And then, yeah, it's super nuts because even if you did know them that way, then this shatters that. You're like, oh, so never mind. They're not like Catholic-y, like do-gooder, married, wonderful right? married couple.
Allegedly.
Sweet old couple. Like, yeah, like that would kind of break that view of them. So
yeah. Whoa. No, I definitely believe Judith, and I was shell-shocked even finding out all this because I knew about the allegations. I knew about that whole situation, but I did not know the depth of it or that she lived with them like 40 years and like, yeah, your entire life is gone. Now, Lorraine and Ed did state that she did have a boyfriend during that time. But like, dude, I don't know.
Can you really, if you have, I mean, if you're like, if you're in a, she said, like, she just said they broke up like, what, 2003 or something. Like, could she really have had a committed relationship if she was committed to Ed and Lorraine kind of like spoken for?
Yeah.
Eek.
So yeah,
sad.
What a crazy little thing. Sad. But yeah, that's kind of all I had this week. Crazy. That's not all I have. Let's just like not lie about things. I have an entire 3-page document written out for Patreon. So if you are on our Patreon, we have more on Ed and Lorraine.
There's always more.
It's batshit. This whole thing, I was like, this is the craziest case I think I've ever looked at. And it's not even fully true crime, which is the wild thing, but the paranormal side of it, all of it is, well, no, it is full true crime. Like, it's just, it's bananas. So if you follow us on Patreon, know you've got that coming. We'll do our live Q&A. If you have questions about the Warrens, all of that stuff, of course, make sure you're liking, subscribing, getting your alerts so you don't miss an episode of our stuff. It really does help us out. But yeah, for now, this was the insane case of the Warrens. So the next time you watch The Conjuring, just know that we can ship fake Ed and Lorraine, but maybe don't ship factual Ed and Lorraine. Whoa. They're dead now, so what does it matter? But yeah, heavy.
Sure, it matters. What does it matter? Oh,
it matters to Judith. Like, definitely, I want her to get her justice and everything. Yes. But I'm like,
so crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's crazy. So yeah, it just shows. I did say this last night too. Maybe we won't even include this in the episode, but it just shows people don't always get their comeuppance in life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, no.
You always kind of hope, you're like, the bad guy will lose in the end. And it's like, Jesus, they've got a whole friggin' Hollywood franchise for them, don't they? And maybe they did all this horrible
stuff. Totally could have been built on lies and horrible stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe somewhere in between. Just, but yeah. Still, yeek.
Crazy. All anyways. Right. Well, till next time. Week. Shit. Cheers.
Cheers.
Huda Media Production.